such something that has some relevance to current events also. It says that after Pinchas killed Zimri and Cosby, so the rest of Klal Yisrael started to say he's a murderer, and that he got those qualities from his ancestors, because he came from Yisro, who was originally in Ovid Avodah Zarah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to testify, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, what he did not come from that side. It came from Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, who was an Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, but sometimes for the sake of Shalom, you have to kill wicked people. Shalom does not mean peace, tranquility, and you do what you want, and I'll do what I want, and Shalom al Yisrael. Shalom means harmony and perfection. And the biggest proof to that is the following Medrash, that I think I mentioned before. The Medrash says that, on the one hand, it seems from the Psukim that when David HaMelech asked to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash, the answer he was given was that he can't build the Beis HaMikdash because his hands are all full of blood from the wars that he made. But his son Shlomo, he'll build the Beis HaMikdash, which seems on the surface to be that David HaMelech was negative because he made all these wars and killed people. He can't build the house of peace, the Beis HaMikdash. Yet there's a Medrash that says just the opposite. The Medrash says that the Rabbanu Shlom answered David HaMelech and told him the following. If you build the Beis HaMikdash, then it's going to be eternal. You can build a Beis HaMikdash, it'll be eternal. And I can't have that option now, because I have to have the option to be able to destroy the Beis HaMikdash if the Jewish people sin, and that is the only alternative to destroying them. As it says, the Rabbanu Shlom took out his anger on Eitzim V'Avonim, on stones and wood, and not on the Jewish people. Chitzei Akal Ben. And the idea is not that God has to vent his anger, but if the Jewish people deserve to be destroyed, and there's no other way of shocking them into changing, then that's it. They're on a suicide course. But if there's something I can do that will shock them, perhaps into a long gullus that will eventually bring them back, then that's the better alternative. So the Rabban Shem said, I have to have the option of destroying the Beis HaMikdash. If you build it, it'll be eternal. Those two things seem to be contradictory. On the one hand, the Psukim seem to say that David HaMelech didn't build the Beis HaMikdash because his hands were bloodied with war. On the other hand, it seems to be that if he would have built it, it would have been eternal. The answer is that, yes, the Beis HaMikdash is a place of peace. There's two kinds of peace. There's peace that comes naturally. There's no war. There's no strife. So in the middle of things are harmonious. And then there's peace you have to fight for, where you have to eradicate and destroy people who would destroy the perfection and harmony in the world. So David HaMelech had a very active peace. Who did he kill? He killed wicked people who wanted to destroy the perfection of the world, to wreak havoc on the world. Destroying them is bringing peace and harmony, except it's bringing it in a positive way. That is such a strong aspect of peace, because it's done actively, right? Aggressively. That kind of peace could build a eternal Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo HaMelech just had passive peace. There was no wars, there was nobody to fight, so he had a very perfect and harmonious situation, but it wasn't achieved aggressively. It was achieved passively. Passive peace is very nice, but it's not the kind of powerful peace that can build a Beis HaMikdash that's eternal. It could be for that reason that before the third Beis HaMikdash shall be built, it says that Mashiach is going to have to wage a lot of wars to destroy the evil in the world, the final war of Gog and Magog, and then the Beis HaMikdash will be eternal. Could be that it fits very nicely because the third Beis HaMikdash will be built after an active destruction of peace. You see two things from here. One is that sometimes being docile and submissive and trying to appeasement, right, ends up with what ended up in World War II. when they tried to appease Hitler, right, Chamberlain or whatever. And people should learn from history that if you try to appease wicked people, right, you don't achieve peace, but you just feed their appetite for more destruction. And the same thing goes now. They've made the mistake a few times already, right, of starting to do something and then stopping prematurely and letting these people lick their wounds and again to try to destroy. They're out to destroy us. They don't make any amends about it. Right? The biggest leftist can't imagine, right, and can't reinterpret what they're saying. Right? They're not even the animals in suits that look like human beings. They don't even wear the suits. Right? These are full-fledged, two-legged animals who are out to not just destroy us, destroy the world, basically. Right? There's no occupation that they're involved in or whatever, because they're doing it all over the world. Right? Where's the occupation in Iraq, or in Syria, or in Afghanistan, or whatever? It's a para of them. And the only way to deal with them is, the only thing they understand, right, is power. And the people in Western countries, right, who don't understand the mindset of these people, including myself and including most of us sitting here, right, and you know, have these great ideas of democracy and liberty and freedom for all, whatever, don't know what you're, and that's why the world looks like it does, because America, that could have done something, right, is always looking to appease and to be very fair and to engender democracies in people who are partial animals. We're going to make democracy an animal farm. That's a kind of democracy you're going to make. So that's one aspect. And therefore, I hope that this time, right, the powers and the government that are making decisions are not going to back off. They talk big.
They're
going to
back off.
Okay. Come on. Come on. Come on. Give your friend a
okay.
Don't be so hopeful this time. How have I not?
Okay. How have I not? They, that's cool. What's going to happen is there's going to be one major thing and they're going to bring out the bodies of little children or whatever and the world's going to start to scream. They didn't scream when they're shooting missiles all over, That they didn't scream. But then they're going to scream, you know, it's not fair, right? You people are overreacting, right, to see what happened if, you know, if they shot missiles from Cuba, right, during the missile crisis way back. That's right. Right, right. They were made to make an atomic war over it. So, you know, again, if we had leaders that were real leaders and had some kind of
vote them in, it's not like we can
blame them. Yeah, the problem is that there's not too many good people to vote in altogether who are interested. So, that's something that you have to daven for. Maybe, someday, whatever. But in any case, that's one aspect. There's another aspect. You see, though, that Pinchas, even though he was Pinchas, right, but he murdered two people. And therefore, Klal Yisrael said he's a murderer. And you needed the Ribono Shel Olam to testify that it's not that case. He wasn't a murderer. Right? L'chore, he did it, you know, L'shem Shamayim. He did it, you know, with zeal, with kina. That's not enough. Right? If it wasn't that the Ribono Shel Olam testified that in this specific case, somebody who publicly lives with a non-Jewish, the halacha is kanoim pogim bo, somebody who feels that zeal has a right to kill that person who is committing the sin. Why? Because he is basically destroying Klal Yisrael. Right? The halacha is, this halacha is not operable today. So nobody should go out of here and say that I said, right, you should do this, right? Because I really like to be free to drive around and I would not like to be in prison. But the halacha is the following, that a person who's a min, an apikoris, okay, if you can find a way to get rid of him, it's a mitzvah to do so. Meaning the following, right? You can't just go and shoot him, because that people will get you for murder. So, for instance, the Rambam tells you, the Gemara says, but the Rambam brings it down by halacha. He says, for instance, if you see the person drowning in a well, okay, and there's a ladder there to get out, you go over to the well and you say, look, my kid's kite got caught on the electric wires. I just need the ladder, but I'll be back in 2 weeks, so tread water, right? The And then you come back in 2 weeks and Nebuch, the guy drowned, right? But that is what you should do. That's what it says. Okay. Now, this apikoros never hurt anybody, lechora. He's just an apikoros. Why would it be okay to kill him? So the answer is, what would you say in the following case? There's a guy standing on the top of a building and throwing hand grenades and shooting a machine gun at everybody who is anywhere near the radius of the building. In cold blood, just shooting bullets everywhere. And you've tried every means to get him down. Okay, you've got the psychiatrist there, you know, with a big bullhorn, you know, trying to tell this guy, you know, let's talk about it, you know, let's think about what do you feel about murdering people like that or whatever. And that for some reason didn't work, right? You had the guy's mother come and beg him and tell him she's going to give him nice cookies if he comes down. And that didn't work. And all the methods they used to try to get these mishugoyim, right, off the building, killing people, didn't ever work. So then they call in the sharpshooters, right, and somebody finishes the guy off. Is that guy a hero or is he a murderer? He's obviously a hero. Like, nobody's going to consider him a murderer. He's a hero. He stopped the murder, innocent of a killing in cold blood of perhaps tens or hundreds of people that this guy would have killed. Chazal say in this week's Sedra, Rashi brings it down, we're not supposed to take revenge on the Egyptians who did not treat us very nicely. We're not supposed to take revenge on Esav, who's our brothers, right? But on the Midianim, they were supposed to take revenge. Why? Because they made us sin. And it's worse to make somebody sin than to kill them. Because if you kill them, you only kill them in this world. If you make them sin, then you make them lose this world and the next world. That's much more serious. So if somebody's standing on a building and shooting what's called physical bullets and killing people, people understand if there's no other way to rid the world of that menace but to kill him, there's a mitzvah to kill him. So why, if somebody is shooting spiritual bullets, right, in polluting the world, causing who knows what kind of havoc and damage that we can't see, but that spiritual damage, right? So basically he's spreading these bullets far and wide and causing spiritual pollution and who knows how many people he is affecting. So why should it be any less of a mitzvah to kill him? That's the pure halacha. Why is that not the halacha today? Right? I'll tell you why. I'll tell you a story. I'll tell you a story. Even if you get away with it, it's still not the halacha. It's not the halacha because you can't get away with it and you get put in prison or worse or whatever. No, it's not the reason. The reason is the following. I'll tell you a story and see what the reason is. I remember in the 60s, there was a Baal Tshuva. Then the Tshuva movement wasn't yet, you know, taken off. So Baali Tshuva were few and far between. There was a guy, he must have been in his early 20s, who became a Baal Tshuva. He grew up in Detroit in a conservative family, and he davened in a conservative temple. And he became Baal Tshuva and became very turned on to authentic Yiddishkeit. Went back one Shabbos to the conservative temple where he grew up, and in the middle of the rabbi's sermon, he shot him dead. That's why the halacha is not like that. Because if you are... Be quiet.
Right.
I remember, you speak that, Avram, when I first came to Matityahu, the first Shabbos, they gave my drasha, everybody's in the shul with these M16s and Uzis. I said, I'm not really sure if I want to speak. In my shul in Miami, people only had beepers, so they went off, they were able to go out here, you know. But that's exactly the reason why the halacha is not like that, because your reaction. Right? If I told you that somebody shot somebody who was killing people, you wouldn't have had that reaction. But I have the same reaction too. What do we see right away? The guy's a nut. Right? Obviously the guy is not normal, right, to do such a thing. Because we don't see the spiritual bullets. You see physical bullets. We don't see the spirit. We may believe it. I may even convince you that it's true, but we don't feel it. It's not the same thing. And our initial reaction is, this guy's a murderer, and he's deranged. And that's a Chilul Hashem. The whole purpose of ridding the world of that Russia is to make the world a better place so people, so the Chazon Ish says, in a world where it was obvious, where there was a Beis HaMikdash, and you saw the results of sin, that it affected and hurt people and hurt the world, and ridding the world of sin brought peace and harmony to the world, then that halacha could apply. But in a world that we live in, we don't see that. We don't see any relationship between sin and destruction or whatever. Two different worlds, the spiritual world and the physical world. In that kind of world, killing this person would be a Chilul Hashem. Because what would people say? What's it called? The guy's nuts. He's deranged. And this is what religious people do. So therefore, the halacha is not like that. Even if you could get away with it, it's not the halacha anymore. It's not going to accomplish what the halacha was there to accomplish. In our situation, the way that we see the world, it's impossible for that halacha to be fulfilled, because it would have the opposite effect. That's what the Chazon Ish says. But even that kind of murder is murder. But when it's 100% L'shem Shamayim, you're saving the Jewish people, you're killing people who are, what's it called, who are polluting the world spiritually, then under the almost ideal situation, like Pinchas, it could be that it's a mitzvah and you'll get, what did Pinchas get for that? Brisi Shalom. He became a Kohen. He was Mechaper. He brought something that's going to atone for the Jewish people. You made one atonement, make other atonements. You brought peace and harmony by destroying the people who are destroying peace and harmony. But in any other situation, right, where it's not mandated by the Torah in that specific situation, for somebody to go on their own, right, and to take revenge, not on people who actually did anything wrong, but collective guilt on somebody just because they happen to belong to the same nation or whatever, right, who may have nothing to do, and even those who say that, well, every Arab is an enemy or whatever, it's also a little absurd, okay? It's surely not an enemy to the case where you're allowed to go kill them, right? Where they're coming, Habola Hargacha, somebody who has intention to kill you, kill them. But somebody who has no intention to kill you, unless he's Amalek, and you know who he is, and the Torah said to kill him, or he's from the seven nations, there was never such a halacha. And just the opposite. It doesn't bring kapara to Klal Yisrael. What does it bring? Terrible, terrible danger to Klal Yisrael. That was Yaakov Avinu was afraid with Shimon and Levi. Shimon and Levi felt justified to go and kill out an entire city, and they were justified. These people kidnapped, that was the city that did it. These weren't innocent people. They harbored kidnappers and rapists of their sister. And all they went to do is to get their sister back and to punish these people. And Yaakov Avinu said, you're going to give the Goyim a sword to take revenge on us, because they're going to say, you see, these people murder innocent people, we can murder them too. And that's what's going to come out from it, and you're endangering the entire Jewish people at the time. And that's exactly the same thing. Anybody who thinks they can take the law into their own hands, right, and do even less than murder, but surely murder, right, where it's definitely not sanctioned, and they think they're doing it, you know, to teach the world a lesson or teach somebody a lesson, the end result is, if it doesn't bring a kapara to Klal Yisrael, and it wasn't sanctioned, and it's not something that you're ridding the world of some rishoyim, whatever, right, somebody who's coming to kill you, to go and fight Hamas, are the ones that are protecting them, and even these innocent, so-called innocent people who are harboring weapons in their house are not innocent. They're habola hargicha. They are legitimate targets. But to go and pick somebody randomly and to murder him, right, there's no one in the world from anybody that says that such a thing is okay. And it's important that the world know that it's not okay, that we don't think it's okay. Right? And I know every organization that can be has spoken out. But it's important that people should realize that it's not, you know, you're endangering other Jews. Who are you to take into your own hands, right, these kinds of methods that are not understood by anybody and that are not just in anybody's eyes, and all you're doing now is making Jews, people hate Jews even more. They have enough reason to hate us. They think. Right? They don't need more reasons. I remember a maisa that I had which really made this personal. I once, when I was a rabbi in Miami, So I once had to go to a dinner in New York. So I took a plane. Those days it was a bus that went from Kennedy, I don't even know if it was called Kennedy then, whatever it was.
Idlewild,
right, to Brooklyn. So I got on the bus and it left me off in the outskirts of Borough Park. Okay. Not the real Jewish section, the outskirts are more Hispanic, Puerto Rican section. I get off the bus and I see that there's a whole convocation with press and radio and television or whatever in front of a public school. So I was curious. I asked somebody what happened. He said, what happened was that there were some firebombings in shuls at the time, and there was an organization which I will not mention the name, right? I wouldn't give the initials. We'll just leave it anonymous. Two youngsters from that who claimed to be part of that organization. I'm not even blaming the organization, but two youngsters decided they're going to get revenge. So they took two Puerto Ricans off the street, who probably had nothing to do with the firebombings, right? They didn't, go and investigate to see. They just said, Puerto Ricans, that's it, we'll take them off the street, and they beat them up. So there was a whole press thing or whatever, these Jews, beat up these poor, innocent Puerto Ricans or whatever, and they did it to make a statement. You can't just go bomb shuls, there's going to be a reaction. But the reaction was haphazard, okay? There's a joke somebody once told me about these haphazard things, right? A guy walks into a bar, and he sees a Chinese guy sitting at the bar, and he goes over and he says, "Remember Pearl Harbor?" And he punches him in the mouth. The Chinese guy says, "What are you talking about? Those were the Japanese. I'm Chinese." He said, "Japanese, Chinese are all the same thing." He says, the Chinese guy gets up and he says, "Remember the Titanic?" And he punches the Jew in the face. He says, "What are you doing? Titanic, that was an iceberg." He says, "Greenberg, icebergs, all the same thing." So, Puerto Rican, this Puerto Rican, that's a Puerto Rican, whatever, right? This is an Arab, that's an Arab. What difference does it make if the guy had anything to do with it? Kill an Arab, kill a Puerto Rican, beat him up. Okay. So I kept walking. All of a sudden, I see that I am surrounded by four Puerto Ricans with iron poles all surrounding me. Mama's surrounding me on all the sides. Now, I first thought maybe this is an honor guard that they send to welcome me to Borough Park, but I quickly figured out that's not exactly what's happening. And the guy says to me, "Your friends beat up our friends." I said, "I have no friends here. I just got off the plane from Miami, right? I don't know anything that's going on in Borough Park. I have no friends here, so my friends couldn't have beat up your friends." He says, "Well, one thing's for sure, you're not going to go back to Miami ever." So I realized this is pretty serious. So I started to say "till them" under my breath, and at the same time talk to them, and started asking them. I said, "Well, could you tell me who my friends were and who your friends are and what exactly happened?" And they start to tell me the whole story. We come to the end of the street, and I said, "It's been very nice talking to you, but I really have to go, so it's nice talking to you." And I turned the corner, and they kept walking straight. It was Mama Janes. As soon as I saw I was out of sight, I ran as fast as I ever... I must have beat a few Olympic... When I got back to my shul, I spoke about what I spoke about just now. Right? People think that they are defending the honor of Jews when in fact they may be putting other Jews into danger. Right? So who has the right to make those kind of decisions irresponsibly? Only people who are responsible for Klal Yisrael. And it may be time, just like here. I agree 100%. They should go in and kill every one of those Hamas terrorists. And the ones who protect them and the ones who whatever. But to arbitrarily pick people off the street, right, and kill them for what other people did is definitely not something that's allowed, nor something that's proper. It's murder. And it's something that not only doesn't help Klal Yisrael, it hurts Klal Yisrael terribly. Okay, enough for the current events. Something on a different level. Something for the women, specifically. says that now there's a census, the final census, before they go into Eretz Yisrael, and the Ribbono Shel Olam puts his name on every Jewish family. Okay? Lechanoch mishpachas hachanochi. Hey in the beginning and a yud at the end. Hachanochi. And the same thing goes with all the families. There's a hey and a yud tacked on to every family. Okay? And the Medrash says, what's the reason? That the world said, well, if the Egyptians, you know, ruled over the bodies of the Jewish people, they probably ruled over their wives too. And therefore, there's probably a lot of what's it called, tainted Egyptian stock amongst the Jewish people from the fact that the Egyptians had relations with the Jewish women against their will. The Torah says not like that. The Torah says it was one case where a Jewish woman was violated by an Egyptian, Shlomis Bas Divri, one case, and it wasn't even her fault, right? And that's it. The Egyptians, the Jews remained, untainted by the Egyptians. And the Ribbono Shel Olam said, I'm going to testify to that. I'm going to put my name on their name. And if they were tainted, if these families were tainted, I couldn't put my name on them. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, Yud Kei, right, the Hey, the Yud is from the name Yud Hey, that name is on there. There's a few problems. First of all, that's only half of God's name. Why not the whole name? Yud Kei Vav Kei, right? And in fact, it's, and why those two letters? And why in the opposite order? Why does the Hey come first and then the Yud? So some say that since God stamped the names, when you have a stamp, a rubber stamp, it's always backwards from the way that you want the stamp to come out. If you look at the stamp itself, it's backwards from what comes out on the paper. So therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam put his name, the Yud and the Hey, backwards, though, Lamaisa, that was the, or the Yud and the Hey is on the stamp and it comes out Hey Yud on the names. Okay, that could be having another shot based on a Kliyokar. This idea of the Yud and the Hey symbolizes the fact of husband and wife. Okay? Shalom bayis, ish v'isha, shchina shruya b'nehem. That you have a husband and wife, ish and isha. The common letters of ish and isha is esh, fire. If you add God's presence, the yud to the man and the hey to the woman, then the shchina is between them. It's the fire of the shchina. If you take out God's presence between husband and wife, there's no presence of God. Then it's esh. Then it's a destructive fire. Then it's there's no shalom bayis and it's. It's just destructive. So that is the idea, ish v'isha. Why is the man with the yud and the woman with the hay? So a few different ideas. One idea is that the yud, it says that this world was created with a hay. Behi bara. God created this physical world with a hay. And he created olam haba, the world to come, with a yud. The role of men in Torah in Klal Yisrael is more for the future. They're the ones who are supposed to learn Torah and Paskin Shailas and develop the world, and they are the Yud, the Olam Haba. But you can't have Olam Haba unless you have Olam Haza properly. The whole way that you get the world to come is by going through this world properly. And the woman is responsible to create the framework in this world to be able to create the world to come. Men are more geared to the more theoretical, abstract, spiritual. The woman grounds it, right? It's 100% like that. Stop. Men think more abstract. Women are more down to earth. They have more common sense, right? I see it myself and my wife. What's it called? Many times I know I would have done things that are totally ridiculous and insane, right? If it wasn't grounded, and my wife said, you know, there's a very simple, a common sense solution or whatever, right? And I think everybody would be masking to that, okay? So in fact, the Gemara says that on the one hand, it says, if you listen to your wife's advice, you're going to fall into Gehenna. On the other hand, the Gemara says, if your wife's a midget, bend down and listen to every word she has to say. So which is it? So the Gemara says, no question, kan b'milei di alma, kan b'milei di shmai. If we're talking about heavenly things, then the man should be the one to make the decision after you discuss it or whatever, but if in the end you can't come to common ground, the man should be the one to make the decision. On the other hand, when it comes to mile di alma, this world things, the woman should make the decision. So most people learn, it means if you have a shaila where to send your kids to school, the man should make the decision. You have a shaila where to put the couch or what color the wall should be painted, that's a woman, that's not what it means. The proof to that is, the Gemara says that when they offered Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to be the Nasi, he said, I have to go ask my wife. L'chora, that was not a this world decision, that was a heavenly decision, whether he should be the Nasi or shouldn't be the Nasi. But the idea, I think, is heavenly things are abstract. In abstract ideas, values, there, ultimately the man should be the one to decide if they can't come to common ground discussing it together. But in mile di alma, meaning more grounded things, it could be even spiritual things, but the more, not abstract, but the more practical aspect, how to really put it into a living situation, that a woman has much more intuition for. Therefore, she should be the one to make the decision. So the yud, which is representative of the next world, that's the man. But the hay, which represents this world, in this world, the woman has to make the environment, the framework, in which you can now function and have the next world. That's one possibility. Another possibility is that God's name, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, symbolizes Hoya Hove Yiyeh. God was, is, and always will be. Past, present, future. The first part of God's name, the Yud and the He, is the letters that can make the past and the future. Hoya and Yiyeh. Okay? You can't make Hove from those two letters, even if you repeat them. The last two letters, Vav-He, is the letters you can make Hove. Just have to repeat the He twice. So, in the first part of the name, the Yud and the Yud is the Yiyeh, and the He is the Hoya. The Yud is the future, and the He is the past. We have to live in this world and forge a future. Okay? Go out and conquer the world and perfect it. That's a man's a role. But all of that is only good if it's grounded in the past, in as an anchor to the foundation of Klal Yisrael, right? Like it says, Zekeli Vanveu, you can enhance Yiddishkeit and have your own subjective way of doing a mitzvah, whatever, and hither mitzvah, and how you're going to make the mitzvah beautiful, and everybody subjectively sees beauty in a different way. What I consider a beautiful Hanukkah menorah is not what you consider beautiful. You, right? What I consider nice cutlery for Shabbos, right? Maybe, you know, old-fashioned in your mind, the modern kind of silverware is nicer. So when it comes to aesthetics, it's a very subjective thing. So in forging the future, right, it's fine as long as it's grounded in the past. It's an anchor. So the woman's job is to create the anchor to the past, to tradition, in which the man then forges ahead and creates a future. So the yud is the yihyeh, is the future, that's the man. The he is the hoya, the past, which is the woman. There's only one problem. Where's the present? Right? The chora, there should be a hint to God's full name. Hoya hove yihyeh. Right? Not only half a name between man and woman, there should be a full name. So I always like to say, it doesn't say ish isha shchina shuri b'neim. It says ish v'isha. Only when there's a vav that connects them is there the present too. The man has his role for the future, the woman for the past. When they unite together with that vav, they create a present. That's the idea. In any case, says the Kli Yakar, he says, therefore, the hay comes first in this situation. Why? Because who really were the main players in Yitzias Mitzrayim that the Jews deserved to leave Egypt? The women. The Torah says it, the Gemara says it. B'schus nashim tzidkaniyos yatsu Yisrael mi-Mitzrayim. The men in Egypt were not necessarily on the nicest level. They were the ones who served idolatry. They were the ones who were not what they should be, as throughout history. Okay, the men served the golden calf, the women didn't. Not even one woman, the pasuk says, "Ish echad me elef matzasi." One out of every thousand served the golden calf. There were 600 people who served the golden calf. The Isha Achas, and not one woman. When it came to the Meraglim, the women did not buy in to the spies. And that's why it says that even though the men who were between 20 and 60 died, the women didn't die. And a tremendous amount of widows went into Eretz Yisrael. The women didn't die in the desert. They went into Eretz Yisrael. So the women throughout history have been more attuned, and they were the ones who were what's called responsible for us going out of Mitzrayim and remaining pure. So therefore the Rabbanu Shlom said, I'm going to put my name, but the hay, which represents the woman, is going to come first. And the yud is going to be at the end of the word, right? Even though normally my name is yud hay, because for God the future is like it's now. And the past is really, there's no such thing as a past. There's only a future, because that's the reality. So by God, the yud comes before the hay. But over here, God said, since the hay represents the woman, and the yud represents, the man, as well as the hay represents the hoya, the past. And the hay represents this world, and this world comes before the next world, and the past comes before the future. And in this situation, the woman comes before the man. I'm going to put the hay at the beginning of the word, and the yud at the end of the word.